Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of June. What we talk about this hour is education. Education proposals in Wisconsin's budget this hour. We'll talk about funding for public schools, expansion of vouchers, the takeover of low-performing MPS schools, changes in licensing teachers, removal of the state's Chapter 220 program, and many other issues. We've done a lot of programs on education, including recently with the superintendents of Mequon, Thanesville, Menominee Falls, and Wauwatosa, who are concerned about public funds for education, and we will highlight some of their comments for our guests this hour. We thought it was very important to have people who are in the process of making legislation that will affect education in the state on this program, and so we're delighted to have with us this hour, the first half of the show, Representative Dale Kunga, who is Republican member of the Wisconsin State Assembly representing the 14th District. He is vice chair, Representative Kunga, of the Joint Finance Committee, an important position. Later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Jim Bender, who is president of School Choice Wisconsin, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. I must tell you that all of our lines are busy at the moment. We haven't started talking yet, but eventually we'll be opening this up to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email, you can send messages there, is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Please leave messages there as well. And we are on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Representative Dale Kunga, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah, nice to have you here. We have had a number of superintendents on this show in recent weeks, Representative Kunga, who have been concerned about the amount of money that is in the budget currently or that will be worked out that will go to public schools. They are seeing a lessening of support for public schools and are extremely upset about that. How does the current budget stand when it comes to funds for public schools, and do you see that there will be changes in that as the budget gets worked out?
Yeah, so essentially Governor Walker introduced the budget, and it had a lot of strong education reforms in there, but there was a cut to K-12 education. And I know we were initially concerned about that cut, and then when we had a lot of town hall meetings, a lot of feedbacks from constituents, there was folks both on the left and the right and in the middle that said, you know, that's just not what we want to see. We don't want to see cuts to K-12 education. So we listened to that. It really backed up our own feelings about K-12, and that is that we did not want to cut that. And so what the Joint Finance did is that the first thing we did when we got to education was we reversed the $150 cut per student that the governor delivered in the first year of the budget. Along those ways, we kind of had a hiccup because we expected a little bit more revenue in May, and those numbers are based on actual forecasts going forward for the national economy, and those numbers came back as zero. But what we did is we looked around and we found money to not only reject the governor's cuts, but put more money in there. So, for example, we cut $55 million from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp, and we put that money towards education. And so, in addition to restoring those cuts, we put $100 more in per child going forward. But what I think is really important is that when we're talking about education, there's a certain amount of funding that we need. There's no doubt about that. But we also need to focus not only on the inputs to education. The inputs would be the dollars, but we need to focus on the outputs. And what we really need to do is take a step back and say, from 2011, when we heard from Democrats that what we were doing to education and what Act 10 did, and that was actually the last time we actually did cut schools. Since 2011, we have not cut schools. Is we heard that we were gutting education, that there'd be massive consequences, that we'd be a laggard in the country in results. And the truth is, if you look at the outputs of where we're at, Wisconsin's graduation rates since then have increased 86% to 88%. But what I get really excited about is the divide, the racial divide, has been less. We actually closed that gap. So, for example, the black graduation rate has gone from 60% to 65%. The Latino graduation rate has gone from 69% to 74%. Our ACT scores are second highest in the country. So even though we have a lot of work to do, in addition to providing more money, what we did is we provided opportunity, innovation, and flexibility to our school boards in our parents, in our teachers, and that's our commitment going forward.
Well, there's some question about those numbers, too, though. If you can include years before that there was a trend showing that there would be higher education rates, and it would be hard to say, I think there was a PolitiFact saying that it was just due to Act 10.
Well, Kathleen, I understand that, and I wasn't the first to admit that, in fact, I think the greatest success in child education is what's happening when that child comes home. What are the parents' involvement? As a father of a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, 3-year-old, and 1-year-old, I totally understand that and I agree. But I think if the correlation went the other way, I think Republicans would have been, it would have been held against us. And without, there would be total correlation, political arguments as far as this is what you did and look what the results are. And I know economically, we're held accountable all the time for the economic numbers. And I would say that in our economics, there's actually larger trends. There's actually larger, like the Federal Reserve, national economy, international economy, that has a greater impact on our results in Wisconsin than our state policy. But in education, it's primarily state policy and local policy that affects your outcomes. And so, you know, I know PolitiFact said we give you a mostly true or a half true, I forgot what it was, but essentially they said not because those numbers are wrong, but because the correlation. And I'm just saying we were told 4 or 5 years ago that we were devastating education, and the numbers just don't say that. The numbers say that we're making progress in education in Wisconsin, and I think you need to look at not only the money going to schools, but you need to look at the outputs. And every single output in education, we are in a better spot today in 2015 than we were in 2011.
Well, the superintendents who were here from Mequon-Thiensville and Menominee Falls and Wauwatosa, and we've talked with other parents' groups throughout the state, believe that there is a real crisis in public education, that the amount of money that is coming to their districts, we have a revenue cap, and so they can't keep pace with health care costs or with energy costs for their districts, that they're looking at much larger classroom sizes, that they're looking at, you know, having to cut certain kinds of programs because they can't operate with the money that they have right now, because per pupil spending has dropped significantly since 2011. How do you respond to that? I mean, you address a graduation rate, but the morale seems to be pretty low among teachers in this state in public schools, and a lot of superintendents are saying we have problems.
Yeah, you know, I think it's only natural, whether it be entertainment or politics and people on the left and the right, that we do a pretty good job in the English language of watering down words. And when someone says there's a crisis in education, I just have a hard time accepting that. I mean, I was, you know, before I got into politics, I was in Baghdad, and I was there in 2008 when things were not going well. And you want to talk about a crisis. A crisis is a child in a school in Baghdad in 2008. I mean, that's to me a crisis. When I look at the Wisconsin education environment, our results are going up. We are still among the top half of the country in the amount of money that we put towards schools. Someone said that we were in the bottom half. That was based on the governor's proposal. We rejected that proposal, restored the funding, and put more money in education. I understand that there is a morale among sort of folks in the education committee. I'm not going to deny that. But I think a lot of that has to do with messaging. And I think we need to have leadership that says, you know what, the sky's not falling. We actually are doing well with our results. And I believe good teachers are worth getting paid good money. I've never argued that a great teacher at MPS should make a six-figure package with all benefits. Because if they take one child and change the trajectory of that child from a life of, you know, whether being incarcerated or not taking care of their family, I mean, those children cost us well over six figures if we don't solve those problems. And one teacher that could solve those problems is worth that. And so, you know, we recognize that, and we're trying to, I think there's some unfortunate messaging where there was maybe some folks made it sound like they were attacking teachers. I've never been one of those folks, and I think the majority of Republicans don't believe that way. And that's, for example, like we're trying to do little stuff. I know it's not huge, but, you know, with the tax reform package we're coming out shortly with, one of the things we're going to do is say, if you're a teacher and you have expenses in the classroom, like, we think you should be able to deduct those from your taxes. That should only be fair. And so recognize that. I think the world of teachers, my wife is a teacher. She was a teacher at Nicolet part-time and only for a little bit. But she's been there. She's felt it. And I've heard the stories. I know how difficult it is. And teachers have our support. And, you know, I think we showed that with rejecting the additional funding cuts for education and putting more money towards it. And hopefully, if we have the right economic policies, we could grow our economy. And among other priorities, we put more money towards education in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. So if public schools are doing so well in the state of Wisconsin, why expand vouchers?
Yeah, I always say with vouchers, I mean, it's not only about the standards of your school. So, you know, if your school is not meeting your academic standards, but it's also about your principals as far as what you want your school to teach your kid. And some of those school parents feel like the schools they want to send their kids have different principal, a different perspective on education. So there's definitely parts in our state where their schools are not so hot. In particular, like places in Milwaukee, for example, the schools, you have schools where not a single child can read a proficiency. I know there's a lot to that story, but providing opportunities for children to have an option education only makes sense. And if you look at it, actually, you know, our state has had a choice program for a while. We've had a public school to public school transfer program called Open Enrollment. So you got to remember that these are choices in education for people in poverty. You only get these vouchers if you're at 185% of poverty and below. And so really when you look at this is not like anybody could go to any school. We're talking about kids that are in poverty and families in poverty. They have the same opportunities to have choices in education just like everyone. Just like we give our veterans choices with education with that GI Bill, or we give our senior citizens choices in health care with Medicare. We have public policies at the federal level that have actually worked pretty well that provide choices with the amount of money that we spend on education or health care or other options we have out there. And those options and those choices should have our support.
The School Administrators Alliance in Wisconsin has said, make no mistake about it, the ultimate objective of voucher advocates is a statewide system of private school vouchers for all Wisconsin's school children. What do you make of that statement?
Well, that's not the case. I mean, the policy is for people that are 185% of poverty and below. So that's where our policy is, and that's where we stand at. I mean, for a family of four, that's $44,177. And I don't consider that's a lot of money where if you're, you know, going to a church with a bunch of people and those folks have levels of income above that and you can't afford, like, why can't that person have the same options of education as someone who is middle class or upper middle class or rich? They should have options in education, and, you know, I stand on where our policy is now. Our policy says you need to be at 185% of poverty or below to be eligible.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We have many of them. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about education proposals and the current Wisconsin budget. We've spent a lot of time on this issue, and we have Representative Dale Coinga, the first half hour of the program, Republican member of the Wisconsin State Assembly, representing the 14th District, Brookfield. And here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave messages there. And we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. We start with Amy in Wauwatosa. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm in Wauwatosa, where there are many of Representative Kuyanga's constituents who are concerned about this taxpayer money being siphoned off from the public education to go towards private schools. I'm just wondering if you can help explain the discrepancy between spending for public versus private education. For example, I know in special education, categorical aid remains frozen, while vouchers for special needs students increase to $12,000 in this budget. Also, when a student chooses open enrollment to another public school, $6,635 follows that student. But if it's a private school, they're going to receive $7,210 or $7,856 for high school that will follow in the form of a voucher. Can you just help explain why it seems like more money is going towards private schools than towards public education?
Thanks, Amy, for the question.
Yeah, thanks, Amy, for the question as well. So it depends on what you're looking at. If you're looking at, for example, a child in the Milwaukee Parental School Choice Program, that child gets significantly less than a same child in Milwaukee Public Schools. So Milwaukee Public Schools, well over $11,000 per kid, where a voucher amount for a kid in the public schools last year was $7,642. So there's still a pretty large discrepancy between the amount of money going to the traditional public school students and those choice students. Amy did mention a couple things. So what we're doing going forward is in the open enrollment program, the choice program, the voucher program for private schools will be the same as it is for public schools to public schools. And Amy is correct that the amount of money for a public school to public school amount child is $6,735, and it's $7,210 for a choice student to a for a private school. I do have an issue with that. I actually argued that it should be the same for both, and I lost that argument. And the reason I lost that argument is because there's other folks on joint finance who, within their districts are net losers of kids, meaning that they have more kids in their districts that go to other school districts. I don't have that case. I have two outstanding school districts that do remarkable work. I have Wauwatosa Public Schools in my district, and I have Elmbrook Public Schools, and I also represent a small piece of Milwaukee Public Schools. They have a net inflow of kids. So I am committed to raising that amount over time, and I think it should be the same amount going forward. But taking a step back from all this, if you look at the amount of money that's going towards voucher students going forward, it's 1% of all education funding, all education spending in the state over the next 10 years, 1%, and it's 2% of the state portion of that. So we're not talking about a large dollar amount of all the funds going to education when you look at the commitment to having choice in education.
Here's an email from Sean. Why aren't private voucher schools subject to the exact same accountability measures as public schools? Please explain why accountability measures are different for schools that receive tax dollars.
Yeah, so it's always helpful in this conversation to talk about like what accountability specifically he's speaking to. Generally speaking, I'm in favor of having the same accountability. In fact, in this last budget motion, it's just amazing some of the stuff doesn't get news when we actually put accountability harder down on the private schools, and we put in there pretty strong language requiring gap audits. I'm a CPA myself, and I think that you should use proper accounting auditing techniques and gap accounting in order to reporting. So I think providing accountability and transparency to both public and private schools is the right answer, and I'll continue to fight for that.
Mm-hmm. And yet, as you know, Milwaukee has had voucher schools for quite some time now. There have been a number of instances where schools have folded after a year or two. People have taken the money and run to Florida. There's a charter school that just closed in the last couple weeks. Is it true that there is accountability in these schools? You don't hear the same thing happening with public schools, do you?
No, I mean, and that's, you know, I think that's unfortunate. I mean, there definitely are some bad actors out there. And the difference between a private school when there's a bad actor and some of the public school bad actors is the private school goes away. I wish there was more accountability on it where we made sure that there's not bad actors in that space. But in the public schools, I mean, we literally have public schools that have been in existence for decades, and they have 0% of their kids that can read proficiency. Zero, not a single child, and yet there's no system where we try something different for those schools. So I think, to be fair about it, there's an educational leader in Milwaukee who I think says it very, very fairly, and he creates three stovepipes in education. There are traditional public schools, there are charter schools, which, by the way, are public schools. So there's traditional public schools, charter schools, and there's choice schools, which are could be private schools. Within those three stovepipes, let's all acknowledge that there are some outstanding schools in all those three types of categories, and there's schools that are bad in all three types of categories, and there's schools in between. And so I think we need to look at a student-centered approach, not a school-centered approach, and that's what we're fighting for. I think we should take a student-centered approach. Let's get, I think, the system and what we're looking for is to shut down schools that aren't performing, whether they be public, charter, or private, and provide better options for our kids to make sure that every kid has an outstanding education, because there's nothing that leads more to your success in life outside of your family situation that is going to have an impact on a larger community than education.
So, Representative Coingo, what's the latest plan for low-performing schools in MPS?
Yeah, so Senator Darling and I spent a lot of time in Milwaukee, and we came up with a pretty comprehensive agenda that we wanted to talk about this past January called Opportunities for Milwaukee. And part of that was taking a new approach to some of these schools that are failing. So we looked down at New Orleans as part of the, and it's not exactly upper replica, there's a lot of things different, but if you look at what happened in New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina came in, had devastating impact on the community, including the schools, and eventually what they moved to was a charter model, just trying different ideas, and it was wildly successful. The statistics are amazing as far as the success they had. So what Alberta Darling and I have fought for and will be happening is Milwaukee Public Schools, is the only failing school district in the state. Of all our school districts, the only one that's failing. And of that district, which has 155 schools, there are 55 schools that fail to meet expectations. Including their portfolio, there's schools where there's not a single kid very proficiently, and there's 36 public schools in that category with less than 10 students can read proficiently. So we said of those 55, let's just try a new approach, no more than 5 a year, in the range of 1 to 5, where we would try going in those schools and either having a different leadership, different public school, it could be a traditional public school, or trying a different charter school operator, and to a lesser extent, probably not going to be used as much, but seeing if there's even a choice school operator that would like to try that campus, which is a non-religious school, and just trying something differently. And so essentially we want someone that has also wraparound service capability. We understand that some of these kids need health care, they need other services that the government provides in other settings outside of school, and we want to bring those into the classroom. And that's what the proposal is about, and that's why the Milwaukee County Executive will be making the appointment of the person who will be in charge of this. And we're really excited to see what we could do with wraparound services and trying a new approach with some of the schools that have very low reading proficiency, if any reading proficiency at all.
And the reason for giving it to the Milwaukee County Executive is?
Yeah, we thought about this a lot. I mean, we thought that the Milwaukee County Executive is closer to the folks on the ground than either the DPI superintendent or the governor. And that leaves us with Mayor Barrett or County Executive Chris Abley. And, you know, we went Chris Abley on this one. The reason was is that, you know, the county is kind of the arms of state government that does provide these services, and we want these services to be in the classroom. Also, just personality-wise, Chris has been very involved with education on the philanthropy side. He's been very generous in raising money, both himself and other folks, for some of these foundations that have tried to turn around and actually have turned around public schools. And so we just think that he was a good fit for it, and we're looking forward to seeing who he appoints and who could do something in the community.
Let's go to a couple more phone calls for you. Darnell in Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi. Thank you, Kathleen, for having this session.
You're welcome.
It's very valued. My comment is, Representative Dale Kuyenga, I spoke with you a couple of weeks ago at Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner's listening session, and I have to say thanks to him. He has about 100 of these a year, and I really wish that you and Rob Hutton and Senator Vukmir would have more of those listening sessions so we'd all have a chance to speak with you. My concern is, as a parent in Wauwatosa, but I'm also a part of a larger group in Wauwatosa, SOS, you said at our last meeting, Representative Kuyenga, that you received thousands of pieces of communication from us alone, and we still feel like we're not being heard. Our group has never said that we have an issue with choice. Our issue is having a second or third education system and we're not currently funding our traditional public education, which is our choice and our constitutional right. And Republican Senator Luther Olson was in agreement with this. My second comment, I have been waiting for you to call me back. We got into a little heated discussion at the end of the last session, but you had quite a line lining up behind me. You are a critical thinker. You're a numbers guy, a CPA guy. I have a really hard time with you being my representative, Dale Kuyenga, putting your stamp of approval on the voucher expansion program when you told me you've only seen 7 of these schools. Alan Borzik, who is a well-respected journalist for Journal Sentinel and an educator in the law department at Marquette University, has seen 100. In several of his articles, he says many of them are poor quality. I invited you and urged you to go with me on a tour to the inner city to some of these voucher schools. I feel you can't put your stamp of approval on there. I feel it's your civic and moral responsibility to see what's happening in these poor quality schools, not just the 7.
All right, let's get a response. We're jammed with phone calls. Representative...
Yeah. Yeah, so we've had a town hall meeting. We had a town hall meeting in Wauwatosa, just myself, and it was good. We heard from a lot of folks, and the biggest things we heard about was in education was delete the governor's cut and put at least $100 more into education. We did that. Yeah, I remember Danielle. I appreciate her phone call. Essentially, you know, I've been to a lot of schools in Milwaukee Public Schools, Milwaukee Public Schools themselves, private schools, and charter schools. And let me just focus on the charter school parks. I remember at that town hall meeting, there was some confusion, and there was actually like a laughter in the crowd when I said charter schools are public schools. And that's important. If you look at the educational landscape across the country, charter schools were founded by a Democrat out of Minnesota. Charter schools have the support of President Barack Obama. Charter schools have the support of Governor Cuomo. And in New York recently, Governor Cuomo and the Democratic legislature came to the rescue of charter schools when they were getting problems from Mayor de Blasio, the mayor of New York City. You know, part of one of the school systems that I support unapologetically is charter schools. And it seems like in the context of educational policy discussions here that we're painted as some sort of radical for supporting charter schools when there's Democrats across the country. Another one close to home here is Rahm Emanuel, Chicago. Charter schools have support of Republicans and Democrats. These educational issues shouldn't be so divisive. And yet I feel like there's a lot of folks that just don't understand what the different types of school systems are and what they do. And I think we could have a robust educational environment here by supporting both public schools, charter schools, and choice schools.
Well, you must admit, though, that there are vast differences among charter schools, and there are some charter schools that operate by different kinds of standards. And I cite the teachers in those schools. The licensing standards might be quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, there's different standards in public schools, charter schools, and choice schools. And sometimes that makes sense. I mean, I have a friend who served with me in the military. When he was in the military, he taught a lot of young men, and men between the ages of 18, 19, 20 years old. And he got out of the military, and he works at a charter school in Chicago. And it's perfect because he works with inner-city young men that he is able to communicate with them, provide a structure in their life, provide a system where they feel comfortable and yet disciplined, and he's effectively teaching those kids. He doesn't have a teacher's license because he went to majored in history in college and then joined the military, but he has a skill set that he could apply in the classroom, and he's doing great work. He's doing God's work in those classrooms. So, no, not every single school is the same setting, and it takes a different resume, but essentially what it takes is school boards and people in leadership at those schools should decide who is the best person for this particular classroom for these specific students, and they should decide at the local level. We shouldn't be deciding in Madison what is right and wrong as far as what a classroom and what kids at the local level need.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't essentially that's what you're doing with MPS, deciding at a state level what's going to happen in this city?
Yeah, when you reach a certain extent where there's a failure. I mean, essentially, the state foots most of the bill for Milwaukee Public Schools. And if you look at that, say, well, what are we getting? Are we getting schools where you have zero kids reading at proficient level? I mean, that's remarkable. And that is literally, I passionately believe that education is the civil rights battle of the 21st century. And when you have kids in these schools that cannot read, this should fire us all up. This is an injustice that we need to fix, and we just can't stand by and say the status quo is going to work for these kids. We need to do something about it.
So where does the budget stand now, Representative Klinga?
Yeah, let me go back to the last point really quickly because it's important. I just read a book by Frederick Douglass called My Bondage, My Freedom. And in that book, Frederick Douglass goes from being a slave on a plantation to being a slave in a house. And when he's in this house, he's getting tutored by the woman of the house and taught to read. And the man of the house comes home, and I won't repeat what he says because it's inappropriate. I don't speak that way. But he says, never, ever, ever teach a black man to read. Because if you teach a black man to read, he'll think he's equal to the white man, especially if he starts reading the Bible. And those aren't exact parallels, but there's something to be said in the 21st century that if you're not teaching our young people to read, it's a form of, you know, slavery represents not having opportunity to do things. If you can't read, you're not going to have the opportunity to do things. And so I think that we should all get fired about that there's schools that have 0% reading proficiency, and so we need to do something about it. So thanks for letting me talk about that. But if you haven't read that book, My Bondage, My Freedom, it's a must-read. On the budget right now, we are hammering the last things out. I mean, we're having professional discussions on the policy among few folks that have difference in opinion. So I think we're getting closer. I'm optimistic that we're getting closer to wrapping this thing up, and I think we could do that shortly.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Representative Dale Coinga, our guest, the first part of this program, we're talking about education reforms in the current budget. He looked at a number of them. We will continue with a special emphasis on voucher schools as we go on with the second half hour of this program. Jim Brender will be joining us, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him. Our phone number remaining 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Jim is president of School Choice Wisconsin. We'll continue in a moment after we pause for a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Bender joins us now, president of School Choice Wisconsin, former chief of staff and spokesman for former Assembly Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald, and he joined School Choice Wisconsin in 2010. Jim, thank you very much for being with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. So let's talk about the voucher portion of the budget, what kind of voucher expansion we're going to see in the state of Wisconsin, and why, Jim, you think it's a good idea?
Well, overall, of course, our organization is focused on providing as many quality educational options for parents as possible, and this budget will make, over time, those educational options more available. As it stands now in the budget, there will be a expansion. There's really three programs in Wisconsin. There's the Milwaukee program, the Racine program, and then what we call the Wisconsin Parental Choice program, which covers everywhere else. And the budget really focuses on the everywhere else, the Wisconsin program. Both Milwaukee and Racine are unlimited. There are no caps for enrollment. There are caps on income, which is the only education sector that actually has caps on the income. The income cap will remain for the statewide program, the WPCP, and there will be a gradual expansion. Really, it's over 12 years because the next 2 years will be limited by 1% of a local public school district. Those students will be eligible for a voucher underneath 185% of federal poverty. And then starting in the next biennium, that will go up 1% a year until it reaches 10%, and then the cap will be gone. So eventually you would have no enrollment cap on the program. It is moving to a new funding system. It mirrors very closely the current open enrollment public school system. Currently there's 50,000 kids, just shy of 50,000 kids, in the open enrollment system between public school districts. That same funding model will now apply to the expansion, the new students entering into the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program.
Mm-hmm. As you well know, Wisconsin has a long and proud history of public schools doing very, very well. We have been number one, number two, number three in the nation for many years. Why move to another kind of system? Why vouchers? What's wrong with strong public schools?
Well, I mean, with all due deference to Representative Coinga, I mean, one of the things you have to realize is I'm sitting here in Madison today, where the African-American graduation rate is still hovers about 50%. When you look at the national scores of where Wisconsin is across all sectors, I mean, roughly 50% of our students are proficient in reading. And so, you know, the argument of why do we keep one system and keep all competitive forces away from it, I mean, that's a monopoly. And there's very few things that we have in our society now, including in every other kind of education, that limits everything and all parents to one choice. I mean, there's just nothing else in life that is that limiting of a nature. And so whether it be a charter school, a virtual school, a public school, a traditional public school, a private school through any number of programs, the idea of having more power given to parents, more flexibility, all those things are things that we support. We believe that the decision for a child's education should be mostly empowered with their parents. They are the ones that know that child the best, in the end, are the most responsible for their education, and so they should be given the most control over that student's education. One other thing I would note is I actually kind of have to chuckle sometimes. I've been around with other public school folks in the Capitol, and they get, you know, very irritated at the advent of private school vouchers. They like the status quo. They don't want it to change. They don't want parents to be given options outside of the regular system. And I chuckle because I say, you know, you guys are arguing about bricks and mortars and putting walls up to keep kids in. You look at what Nevada just did with a statewide education savings account where you're going to be able to bundle with a single student multiple multiple ways of combining classes in public school and private school and online and all these other things. You can be fighting about, you know, your brick-and-mortar schools, and technology is going to fly right past you because education 20 years from now is not going to look anything like it does now. I mean, the idea that you need to physically sit in a classroom for 8 hours a day to get the information. I mean, Kathleen, when you and I went to school, I'm, you know, a graduate of a public high school here in Wisconsin in the mid-80s. You had to go to school to get the knowledge. You had to sit in the classroom and have somebody speak to you. I've got a smartphone sitting next to me right now where all the information in the history of the world is available to me through the Internet. The idea that we're going to have to go to the education as opposed to the education coming to the student, that's all going to be changed in the very near future.
Well, I think you need a teacher to guide you through all of it, or you're going to get lost in the Internet, don't you think?
Well, I think there's always be a role for teachers. I think that will always be the case. But the idea of talking about this system, that there needs to be one system and only one system that is going to be able to educate students, I think that is not the wave of the future. If you want to try to retain single control over education, I think technology is going to pass you by.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the record, though, of voucher schools, and we're talking about a significant expansion in Wisconsin, and we have a long record here in Milwaukee. It's been around for years here in the state. And there are studies, and I can cite one of them from the Wisconsin Legislative Audit Bureau done a couple years ago, did a five-year study and found that the students in Milwaukee, and there are many of them, who are using vouchers to attend private schools perform no better on standardized tests than their counterparts in public schools. So if you're going to have less accountability and move to a voucher system, don't you want to have better results?
There are better results. And the Audit Bureau didn't actually do that study. The Audit Bureau reviewed the School Choice Demonstration Project, which was handled out of here, out of the University of Wisconsin. In Madison and the University of Arkansas. And while it did not find significant changes, and the final year of the study actually did find a fairly significant bump in growth in reading scores for the voucher program, it did find statistically significant increases and improvements in graduation rates, college acceptance rates, and college retention rates. I mean, the standard, I've applied for a number of different jobs. I have never been asked for my standardized test score in high school. But they do ask if I graduated from high school, if I got into college and I graduated from college. Those are far better indicators of what life in the future is going to be. And when you look at the whole cornucopia of what education is, to try to narrow it down to just standardized test scores is not a complete picture of what's happening in education today. I also find it interesting that most people that point to standardized test scores, and again, you're talking about a significant cost difference to get that same result. I mean, on a return on investment standpoint, you're spending far less on a voucher and getting the same result as a public school. The county argument could be made. Well, if you're getting the same result at half the cost, why are you spending twice as much on a public school if you're getting the same result? So, I mean, again, to use a simplistic measure like a standardized test score seems to be kind of the cup du jour for opponents of school choice. When you roll that back and say, well, then we should be able to judge teachers by that. Because when you have public schools that don't do any better on standardized test scores, to present something, you know, fairly radical, even as much as the representative before us, Representative Coyenga, you know, with what they're doing, you get all sorts of pushback when you say, well, then we're going to use standardized test scores to actually impact change on public schools. Then you get the stop sign put up in front of you.
Let's go to some phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Jim Bender, president of School Choice Wisconsin, is our guest this part of the show. And we go to Barb in Milwaukee. Hi, Barb.
Hello.
Go right ahead, Barb.
Well, I've got a couple. First, I have a question. What is your degree in, sir? Do you have a degree in education or curriculum development? No?
But I don't
Does
run a
Senator
school.
Does Senator Darling have a degree in education?
Barb, let's get to
actually,
the question.
Actually, I don't know, but this isn't about me personally.
Yeah, let's get to a question, Barb.
Well, the question is, public schools are supported by the public. They always have been. I live across the street from a Catholic school that I believe, is a voucher school or a choice school. I'm not sure. But I don't want my money going to pay for someone to learn about religion. I want it to go to the kids to learn the way I did.
Well, we live in the freest country in the world, and the beauty of that is that everybody's entitled to their opinion. But when it comes to how education dollars are spent, some opinions matter more than others. And the opinions of the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court have no problem when the parents are directing the educational dollars that religious schools are involved. The same with the GI Bill, the same with Pell Grants. You can take those to either here, you could come here, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and go to school here. You can also go to Marquette. So while these are often talking points of school choice opponents, the idea of directing where your tax dollars are going is settled law. And both the Wisconsin Supreme Court and United States Supreme Court have no problem with it and have actually encouraged. I mean, I think their rulings were fairly clear. Yes, there's a constitutional requirement that there be a system of public schools. Nobody's denying that. The Wisconsin Supreme Court was particularly pointed when they said the legislature is free and clear to provide educational opportunities up and above that requirement for the public school system. And they found that the voucher program, with dollars being redirected by the parents to religious institutions, was not a problem.
Let's talk about money for a moment. Barbara sends this email, and this is a concern, as you know. It's not parents being given an option. It's big business having an option to own and run our schools. I'm so opposed to this. Stevens Point has wonderful public schools. Those who want a private education should pay for that, period.
Well, I don't know when she's referring to big business. I don't know who that is. The vast majority of the schools in the Milwaukee and Racine parental choice programs are, and now in the statewide program, are local religious, local church schools. There's certainly a number of them that aren't religiously affiliated, but I'm not aware of anybody that's running for-profit, corporate-centered education. I have no idea what she's referring to. And what was the Stevens Point question? What was the second part of that?
Stevens Point has wonderful public schools. Those who want a private education should pay for it.
Oh, you know, that's, again, that's a, the, again, with an income limited program of 185%, you are talking about people that can't afford it. There are scholarships available, sure, in a small aspect, of enrollment across the state. But for the most part, all of the parents that are here eligible for the program, you know, wouldn't have eligible to that. I happen to believe that I think education, there's a legal requirement that you send your children to school, some sort of school. The private schools all across the state meet that legal requirement of if you're sending that child to the school. I just don't think it should only be people of means that have access to educational options. I mean, the idea that the poor in this state should have fewer options than those with money and those with wealth, I just fundamentally disagree with that. I think everybody should have the same options in education.
The rocket ship schools on the south side of Milwaukee, are those not for profit?
I don't know if they are not. Those are charter schools. And if you're talking about the private voucher program, they are not part of the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program.
Let's go next to Mary in... No, let's go to somebody in Eau Claire first. We'll get to Mary. Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I have children who are graduates of both the UW system and Marquette. And when we talk about doing a child's education online, I know that there are parents, myself excluded, that want their children to exceed so badly to get into top schools that there's no accountability. It's invisible. Where's the oversight that the parents aren't fudging to make sure that their children can get into the UW system or Marquette? And if Act 10 hadn't gutted the teachers' union, we wouldn't have had so much teacher flight.
Jim.
I honestly have no idea what she's asking me. This is not related to the school voucher program in any way, so I'm unclear as to what she's asking.
What about her comments? Let me just figure an angle to have you comment on. Would you agree that that there has been a gutting of public schools, that there has been a lack
Absolutely
of support
not.
For public
no.
schools?
I would not agree with that at all. As a product of public schools and a father of children that are in public schools, I have been involved. I've got 11 years of varsity volunteer coach experience at multiple different public high schools around the state. The idea that the number one item in the state budget, people forget the vast majority of funds, I should say it's not a majority, it's less than 50%, but compared to what's number two, which is now medical assistance, the highest percentage for any single item in the state budget is K through 12 education. It is billions of dollars per year. As they were talking about, in the next 10 years, it is expected that the state of Wisconsin, at a minimum, will spend $94 billion in the next 10 years on public education. They'll spend, under the budget proposal, anywhere from $600 to $800 million on the statewide voucher program. That's less than 1% of the education dollars. If you want to have an honest discussion about where state dollars are going, understand the amount of money that the state will spend in the next decade on the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program, the voucher program statewide, is about the same as the increase that medical assistance, Badger Care, Medicaid, Medicare, is getting in this budget, this biennium. They're getting a $664 million increase. If you want to know where the money is going in the state budget, if it's not going into K-12, they're getting a small increase. The big increase over the last decade has gone into health care. That's where all of the new GPR dollars are going. It dwarfs the voucher program. It dwarfs everything else. All the money is going into health care. So if there's any sort of rub between where money is going in the state budget, it certainly is in the voucher program. We are in mere rounding error on the whole not just education, but the whole state budget. Again, the state's going to spend $94 billion in the next decade on public education. I don't think you can say that that's gutting education in any way.
Jim Bender is our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. More calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tammy in Freeport, Illinois is next. Hi, Tammy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had 2 points I wanted to bring up. I want to know if there has ever been a case where a parent was forced to send a child to public school because, as far as I'm concerned, everybody has an option. You can even homeschool. And how does this not violate the separate but equal clause? Because not every school district has the opportunity to move a student to a voucher school. So I don't know how it cannot violate the U.S. Constitution.
Jim?
How is a child forced to go to a public school? I think if you reside in an area that whether there's a private school there or not, if you can't afford to go to anything else, if you are a low-income student, which is kind of the whole genesis behind the school voucher program, that if you are in a position where you don't have educational options, the school choice program is there to provide them. I think that's actually getting to her point. The second area, as far as equal protection, I mean, you're going into a system now where you are going to have – there are currently, so just for landscape purposes, there's 117 schools in Milwaukee in the program. There's, I believe, going to be 19 schools in Racine, roughly. And there's currently 31 schools in the statewide program. It's much smaller than the other two programs. There's only 1,000 kids in it. We're going to have 90 schools in the statewide program starting next fall. We anticipate that will grow, maybe not at quite that pace, but certainly over the next, 5 or 6 years, you're going to get up into the hundreds of schools scattered all over the state. So you're going to have opportunities for students from every corner of the state of Wisconsin. One of the interesting things will be private school enrollment has been going down, especially with the downturn in the economy. You've seen some of the smaller schools close simply because they haven't had enough people that could afford to go to school there to keep enrollment up. The voucher program may stem that tide, and you may actually see private schools open up that had once closed. So I do believe, though, you will see hundreds of schools scattered into every corner of Wisconsin, and students will have opportunities that they don't currently have.
Thanks, Jim, very much for being with us. Jim Bender, our guest this half hour, president of School Choice in Wisconsin. And we also thank our earlier guest, Representative Dale Coinga, for being with us to look at changes to public education, expansion of voucher program, looking at funding issues for public schools in the state that will be a part of the Wisconsin budget. If you didn't make it on the air, our lines were very crowded. Go to our Facebook page. We'd like to hear what you think about all of this, and that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley for producing the show, and thanks for your calls, everybody. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we will return with another hour of conversation looking at a time during Ottoman rule when Muslims, Christians, and Jews lived together in peace.